nastywork.com. All right, it's NASTYWURK.
But they're alive. Calm down. Nobody stole your kids.
That's like money saying, all right, look, you don't want to battle me. Battle one and somebody on my lead.
Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech.
The reality is that American partnership market value.
Let's go!
Is depreciating with every passing year.
But artists, this is a good way to get your music popping right now and get something going for yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, what's going down? It's your man, Mr. H, live and in full effect. Y'all know how we do it. We're holding it down for, that's right, anchor.fm/215, the Nonstop Working Podcast. Look, I want to rap with y'all. I'm going to try not to extend it too long and be talking all crazy in the beginning here, because I'm going to cover some things. I want to leave enough time to get into it all. No, but again, shout out to everybody who's been visiting the website. I rocks with you guys. Shout out to all of you. We've been doing decent traffic. Of course, let me know what you think about that kind of idea. You know, something like that, or what ideas do you have? But I see this very real need for real order, man, and it needs to be amongst men. It's not something that we need to go ask women for permission for or nothing like that. It's something that we need to be taking upon ourselves to do right now because, this stuff is getting out of hand. Okay, it's getting real crazy out here. I'm still hearing a lot of folks talk about slavery and everything like that. I really want to encourage us to get beyond that as best as possible. This is last minute stuff. We should have already been doing our due diligence and working those kind of things out of our psyche. However, you know, we're going to continue to do what we can to inform people where we can. So I want to take a moment here in this broadcast to just point out some simple things that I've came across, all right, to add to the staggering amount of evidence suggesting and supporting that, supporting the claim that slavery did not exist, and especially in the ways that has been taught in American public education, so on, for the past whatever years. It's important that we really get this out of our minds, because this is the kind of thing that many of our young children think is true in terms of slavery and their upbringing and their existence and their lineage. Many of our children think that they are product of nothing and therefore will have a life that results in nothing and nothingness. And that's a really, really hurtful thought if you can empathize. I'm thankful that I'm able to empathize. And so I want to have these simple talks, man, because I don't think it's complicated talks that we need to have. It's simple talks. Sometimes when you're trying, like the amount of work that's been done on the psyche of our brothers and sisters is really vast, man. It's a lot of work. And we're talking about years of it. We're talking about us coming from families of this kind of trauma and stuff like that, where even members of my family need to hear this kind of thing that I'm going to say. If I was to try to say it to them sitting in a living room setting or something like that, they wouldn't allow me to get the words out. And even if they did, they wouldn't take it seriously, because that's how much trauma there is. That's how real the work is that has to be done here. All right, so I want to point out some things, though. So I'm going to jump into it a little bit. But definitely, we need to be organizing, fellas. We need to be organizing. That has to happen. All right, but the tale is that, or the claim is that, America was started when Christopher Columbus, or after Christopher Columbus, discovered America and brought over slaves, killed off the Indians, and established colonies and so on and so on. Now, I told that a little bit all over the place, which I know. I know that there's a specific order and a correct order to discuss all of that. What I'm pointing out is that in grade school in America, we're told this tale, and we're also allowed to have this distorted understanding of what we believe or what has been prepared for us as history. Okay? We're allowed to have that preparation in disorder. We're allowed to. Okay, so at no point in time in grade school is any teacher correcting that timeline and making sure that the information is accurate. They hurl it at you. The textbooks are all over the place. The textbooks jump back and forth and stuff like that. And if you remember it, you remember it. And what you remember is whatever. But yeah, so I get it. But the basic thing that most people believe they know and understand is that, okay, Christopher Columbus discovered America. And when he got here, there was nothing going on that allegedly there were some people in huts called Indians, and that he and some few other Europeans fought all of them off eventually and conquered and all this stuff, kind of jazzy shit. This is what the tale is. That's how most black folks who really aren't well informed on the matter, that's how they might regurgitate it. And that's how many Europeans and foreigners might regurgitate the forming of America and coming to of America as well. In fact, a lot of these immigrants, when they come over here and they have to go through that process of what they call it, where it's like you got to go through that process of learning the American history to gain citizenship, to go through that whole that process, that test thing and everything. It's like a test. That's a part of the gaining American citizenship, where you got to prove a level of proficiency and whatnot. Well, in that, you know, they encourage foreigners to misunderstand so many things or to accept incorrect information as the truth just to gain citizenship. So knowing incorrect information for some people is a part of gaining citizenship in America. And I think that's interesting, because there's also this culture of accepting wrong and misinformation that's required in America for you to be considered a upstanding citizen. And it's very interesting. So, you know, that's there. But the reality is, or more of the truth, is that did not happen. That Christopher Columbus did not discover America. And if a individual named Christopher Columbus, or another name, which we know that that isn't the name of the person who sailed or made his trip or voyage to America, we know that that isn't the true story. You know, we know that the claim isn't possible, right? That it is possible for an individual to have traveled here and came upon America and saw it. However, to claim that there was nothing there, that is inaccurate. To claim that people were in teepees, with the suggestion that because they were in teepees, they were somehow weak or not civilized or advanced, that is inaccurate. And that any kind of shipping of slaves who were held captive against their will and brought by the hundreds and thousands from another land to this one, that was not possible. Okay? So any idea that we have of Christopher Columbus connected with conquering America and establishing it, and doing so with the aid of thousands of dark-skinned people from Africa that were captured, chained, and held against their will and brought miles across the... that none of that's possible. None of it is possible. That whole story and claim should be deleted out of your mind as relevant to you. And I'm speaking about Americans. Now, there's things that we can maybe go discuss about Christoph or whatever, if we want to. But what I think is most interesting to understand about the individual named Christoph is that that individual did not come to America on their own. They were sent. They were hired. Okay, so or Christoph was not the power. There was a power behind the Christoph. So that's what I find to be most interesting in that regard. However, my examples here are, hey, nobody brought hundreds and thousands of people from another land to here against their will, because that's not possible to do. All right? That's what I want to point out here. All right, now, I want to show y'all here. This is a clip that I want to play. It's a video on YouTube, right? It says, "Jobs aboard a pirate ship," and it's just going to talk about jobs aboard a pirate ship. I would love to play the whole thing. I won't play the whole thing, but I want you to hear this so you understand the life of pirates a little bit. Now, this won't go into how they lived all crazy outside of the ship and all stuff like that, but it will talk about the positions that were held and utilized on the ship to maintain control, order, and so forth, right? I also want you to understand and take from this the amount of individuals that was required to successfully operate a ship at this time, right? The person Christoph Colón, this individual was essentially, if the individual was a sailor, he was much like one of these pirates. Now, they weren't called pirates. Do you understand what I'm saying? They could have been called a number of other things, right? But he was an individual who was hired, right, to go to sea, to go out at sea and carry out a particular mission for whatever the reason, okay? So he would also need individuals with him to operate the ship. He would not be able to just hop on it himself and float in the water all the way here by himself. He would need a crew. Do you understand? And the crew would be necessary to run the ship. Now, in this video, they're going to explain to you how they're going to explain to you the different positions on the crew, how they would gather the crew, and they're going to talk briefly about the varying nationalities of the crew. So you understand that that ships were being manned and crewed and operated by mixed nationalities of individuals, that it wasn't a black-white situation at the time and couldn't have been if you were going to, you know, conduct business at sea, and that wasn't what life at sea was. So check it out.
The pirate ship was in many ways a self-sufficient society, floating in the sea. For this reason, a lot of different assignments were necessary to keep the ship and crew in top trim, ranging from the most menial of drudgery to more specialized professions. In this video, we will take a look at all the jobs found aboard a pirate ship. First of all, let's take a look at how a pirate ship was organized. The crew was organized into several work units. The smallest was the mess, a group of between 6 to 8 men. They worked, ate, and were off duty at the same time. Messes might be further divided into messmates, pairs or trios of men. The entire working crew was divided into the starboard watch and larboard watch. One was managed by the quartermaster, the other by the sailing master. Watches rotated each other between working and relaxing in 4-hour shifts. Now let's move on to the different jobs, starting out at the absolute bottom. Pirates viewed slaves as another form of cargo, to be plundered, stowed, and sold. Until then, the slaves could be kept for doing menial labor, like pumping, cleaning, carrying stuff, lighting the pipes for the pirates, or cooking. If the pirates were desperate for manpower, they might recruit slaves into their crew. A slave was likelier to be recruited if he spoke a European language, especially the pirate's own. However, if a free black or mulatto refused to join the pirates, they were just as likely to enslave them anyway. You might not be any safer if you were white. If pirates had a particular need for crewmen, they might force you to join them. Press ganging, essentially. It was.
Now you see there, you did not say that sailors and pirates were exclusively European. You understand? Nothing like that. Said all of the nationalities were involved, right? Let's go back a little bit. Let's hear him say it again clearly.
Likely to enslave them anyway. You might not be any safer if you were white. If pirates had a particular need for manpower, they might recruit slaves into their crew. A slave was likelier to be recruited if he spoke a European language, especially the pirate's own. However, if a free black or mulatto refused to join the pirates, they were just as likely to enslave them anyway. You might not be any safer if you were white. If pirates had a particular need for crewmen, they might force you to join them. Press ganging, essentially.
All right. So they said the pirate balls wasn't, you know, it was like their whole thing was, look, we need folks to work the ship. And we will force individuals to do that. We don't care what your nationality is or what color you are. That wasn't a concern. You know, anybody could get that work as far as pirates went. Their whole thing was somebody's got to man the ship. We need the ship manned. You know, without people to do the work needed on the ship, there is no movement of the ship.
It was rarely practiced by the buccaneers of the 1600s, and some pirate crews did forbid it. Now, the treatment of forced crewmen varied. Some were treated like slaves, others were expected to be an integrated part of the crew. Some of these warmed up to the pirate lifestyle, but others refused, hoping one day to receive a pardon. Some forced crewmen even got organized, and rose up against their piratical overlords. The average pirate was in his mid-20s, sometimes younger, sometimes older, but young boys between 7 and 14 years of age were sometimes kept aboard. They were usually the private servant of a captain or officer, sometimes indentured, other times enslaved. Slave boys were offered as gifts, sometimes even kidnapped by the pirates themselves. They did menial assignments like cooking, cleaning, fetching items, and during battle they most commonly served as powder monkeys, fetching powder and ammunition for the gun crews. They were paid less, if anything at all. Landsmen were inexperienced in the art of sailing. It's in their name, landsmen, man of the land, rather than seamen, man of the sea. Usually it was their first voyage. Aboard a pirate ship, landsmen were typically soldiers recruited for their fighting ability. They might be deserters, sacked militiamen, or the abandoned garrison of an African fort. They were treated better than slaves and forced crewmen, but they were given a smaller payment than experienced seamen. Free crewmen were the actual pirates, and formed the bulk of their company. They had signed the Articles of Agreement, took shares of the plunder, and carried their own weaponry. Rather than being seen as employees, they should be seen as co-owners or associates. The success of the piratical operations was entirely dependent on the investment of its free crewmen.
So this sounds similar to unions. how unions function. This sounds similar to that. But it just sounds similar to that, the way they just said that. I don't know if you heard it.
Merchant or navy ships, pirate ships were organized democratically. Major decisions, such as if the crew should attack a ship, or what location they should sail for next, was handled through a majority vote. Certain positions were elected, forming the bulk of the pirate company.
And all this other jazzy shit. Who else was with Christopher Columbus when he did it? Who else? Who were the other 25, 35, 40 people that would be needed to operate a sailboat, especially one containing such precious cargo as humans? Who are the other people? Who are the generals that were with him? Who are the landsmen? Who were the fetch it boys? Who are all of them? If he did what he did, it should be a whole squad of individuals that get mentioned, right? We never hear of anyone else. And so it leads us to think as children that this one individual man was just so brave that he took board a ship of his own and just let the wind push him all the way to America while gathering up Negroes from lands that he went on and told all of them, get back, I'm taking niggas from y'all. And marched them onto the boat with chains and then packed them all into the basement of the boat and just moved their asses along to America. This is how they make it seem. And friends, that's just not possible. This is the video here. It says, running the world's biggest cruise ship in the world's richest resort. And this is going to be a video showing one of these, what you guys call them, one of these cruise ships. And I just want to play it a little bit for you so you get an idea of what running a vessel that large and tending to that many people is like and what it actually requires. Now, of course, this is going to be, maybe we can say exaggerated, because these cruise ships are themed and therefore the purpose of entertainment, right? However, I do think they are good examples of what we're talking about, being at sea and what's required and how difficult it is. Even when you consider how these large ships have to dock for refreshments and dock for restocking. Okay, so they have to load up tons of resources. This is what you'll be able to see here. Hopefully this is the right video, and it'll talk about that. And then how much consumption occurs on the ship throughout the time that they're sailing, and how much they have when they return. So, like I said, you have to have, I talked earlier about having the need for space to store rations and things. Hopefully this is the correct video, and it'll talk about that kind of stuff a bit. But just think about that.
The MSC Seaside is one of the biggest cruise ships in the world. Built at a cost of over £1 billion and weighing in at 160,000 tons, it's home to more than 6,500 people. With 2,000 guest rooms and 800 staff cabins, it's a giant floating hotel.
We can go through 20,000 eggs per day.
A glamorous holiday destination.
20,000 eggs per day, he said.
Everything is there for you.
This is the event you've all been waiting for.
And an astonishing feat of engineering.
This is one of the most huge generators in the world.
But how does this city at sea really work? With exclusive access to a luxury Caribbean voyage, we explore the ship's hidden secrets.
This is huge. Without the laundry, nothing can happen.
We're feeding the fish. It's recycling in a nice way, isn't it?
It's quite amazing how all these mechanisms have to work together.
And the hidden army of people that keep this extraordinary ship running.
Any crew... Y'all hear that? He said, first of all, he said they can go through about 2,000 eggs in a day, right? They said they need massive people. They need massive amounts of people to be able to work together to operate every day. That's what they said, right? And then he said there's an army of unseen individuals that make operating the ship happen every day. So, you get what I'm saying? You, this at sea ship moving people shit, that's not easy. That's not as simple as just put them on a wood boat and sail them over. Still to this day, if you're going to be at sea, especially with thousands of people, hundreds of people, you need a lot to be able to take care of that, to make that trip, them voyages successfully.
It's 7 a.m. on Saturday, and the gigantic MSC Seaside has just docked in Port Miami, the biggest cruise ship terminal in the world. In just 12 hours' time, this floating city is heading off for a week-long cruise, traveling more than 2,000 miles across the Caribbean. But before then, it needs to be transformed. There are over 2,000 rooms to clean, 5,000 passengers to disembark, and 15,000 pieces of luggage to come off in just a few hours. Then the ship needs to be refueled, restocked, and refilled with passengers all over again. In the cruise business, it's known as turnaround day, and the clock is ticking.
Many people think that we're coming in the day before, we stay overnight, we take a rest, and then the next morning they come on and they see the ship. So many people ask me, when did you arrive? And we say, we arrived this morning.
But how can the crew do so much in so little time?
Of course, our turnaround day is very hectic, but this is a dance because everything has its timing and it's like a choreography.
The day is a complicated ballet where every crew member needs to remember their moves. But this complex dance relies on something a bit more mundane. One very long corridor. Down on deck 4, a secret crew passage runs the entire length of the ship. It's known as the I-95. It's the only way to move people and cargo quickly around the ship, and it's crucial to the entire operation.
How many elevators are we using? Only one? Guys, hold on the elevator.
First thing in the morning, the I-95 is packed, as a hidden army of workers take 15,000 bags off the ship through just 2 doors in less than 2 hours.
Of course, you see that we have our pool attendants helping us with the luggage because on turnaround days, all hands on deck, we need all the manpower available.
Please align all the people right now, please.
And it's just as busy port side, where a separate team of dock workers have to work in tandem with the ship's crew.
We normally have about 13 forklifts and 57 porters working on a given day. It's extremely hectic.
It isn't just luggage coming ashore. Over the last week, the ship has accumulated some unpleasant cargo. 50,000 gallons of human waste. Today, 5 tanker loads of poo will be removed for disposal. For the turnaround machine to work, the ship has to be loaded at the same time it's being emptied. This morning, it needs to be stocked with enough food and drink to last the entire week.
Okay. This is for those cones, you know? This is for decorations. Dove la cattiva?
Dove la... Now I'm letting this play because I needed to play long enough for you guys to get the idea here. They said that as they docked here, Now, before I go, these ships are much larger than the ones here, this cruise ship. These are way, way, way larger than what a Columbus would have been sailing in. However, what a Columbus would have been sailing in, as they're suggesting, and I'm saying in history, as they're allowing us to believe, or they're implying, those ships would have been some of the larger ships at their time, of their day, they would have been some of the more up-to-date, expensive vessels, okay? So this is a somewhat of a good comparison. Like, okay, sure, then they weren't these big cities on the ocean. However, they were really big vessels. Now, seeing as how Columbus sailing, his ship would not be comparable to this kind of vessel that we're hearing about here, this cruise ship, you should really understand how less likely it is then of him or that story in the Christopher Columbus tale to be true. Yeah, because their ships weren't even as big as this. These ships are carrying thousands of individuals who are partying, and they've got casinos and restaurants and all of this on their ship. Columbus and them didn't have any of that, all right? So their ships weren't even big enough for that. So you should understand why it wasn't big enough for thousands of individuals to be on their ships. Like, no, they couldn't have had that. There wouldn't have been any way their ship could have had thousands of individuals and the space necessary for food rations, crew. Do you see what I'm saying? Where I said you need individuals to maintain the individuals. That's what they're talking about here. When the ship docks, all the people get off, right? And then there's the crew, right, who were like the people who were running the operation and work with the captain and stuff like this. They're navigating the ship. And then there's all these other people aboard who are mopping and sweeping and cleaning rooms and preparing food and getting rid of human waste. It's another very important point, right? And this is what we mean. If you had thousands of people stored on a ship and their human cargo, if you had human cargo, that human cargo would produce human waste. That human waste would be, it would have to be maintained. It would have to be cleaned up, cleared out. Do you understand? So there would have to be individuals who just did that, who just tend to the maintenance of the cargo's mess. We're not talking about grapes. We're talking about living human beings. So they're going to be going to the restroom 2-3 times a day, 2-3 times a sun up and sundown. And you're going to have those individuals locked up in chains, shackled, laid next to one another in dark spaces for that Amistad shit. Y'all seen Amistad? That Amistad shit. Lies. Could not have occurred. All right. Did y'all see how much waste? Listen to how much waste they said was removed. Just waste. Human waste.
50,000 gallons of human waste. Today, 5 tanker loads of poo will be removed for disposal.
50,000 gallons of human waste was being removed from that cruise ship. And it was going to take 5 of those, you know, those gasoline trucks, those big trucks, those tankers with the little silver trucks on it. They said it was going to take 5 of those to remove all of that waste that day. So could you imagine a slave ship with 400, 500, 600, 700, 1,000 individuals stored underneath or the lower deck or on the lower deck of the ship? How much human waste would accumulate within 48 hours time? Now, let's go a step further. Can you imagine a ship with that many people at sea, in the middle of sea, 30 days away from shore, right? 30 days out from shore. Imagine the human waste 30 days from shore in the hot sun in a moist area with very little sunlight or exposure to air and such. What kind of environment would that be? It would be an absolutely toxic environment. Nothing would be able to live there except for things like mycelia and so on. That would be a horrible environment to be in. You would not be able to take humans in it, travel great distances, months at a time, arrive anywhere and have living human beings that are healthy, especially healthy enough to sell. It wouldn't happen. I'm going to continue on.
For the turnaround machine to work, the ship has to be loaded at the same time it's being emptied. This morning, it needs to be stocked with enough food and drink to last the entire week.
This is for those cones, you know? This is for decorations.
Dove la cattiva? Dove la...
Giuseppe, dove sono le aragoste qua?
Ben Mohammed is in charge of the operation.
L'altro muchacho, no, questo è il punto.
Now this one is a lobster inside, you have to go on board.
Every week, I'm talking, it's a chaos, but the chaos have a limit.
I think that's an interesting thing.
This one piece will make 52 layers.
Watch on mobile devices or the big screen, all for free. No subscription required.
In 6 hours, Ben and his team will load 160 tons of food onto the ship, worth over $1 million. Throughout the morning, lorries arrive from a...
So they're going to load over $1 million worth of food onto the ship. That's for the folks to eat. Over $1 million worth of food. That's for one trip there. $1 million worth of food they're going to load up. 160 tons. So Columbus would need enough food on the ship to make it to where he is. Then when he got to where he is, whatever he was selling would need to make him enough money to be able to get enough food to load that joint back up to go back the same distance. So you understand, business got to be legitimate. Money got to be around. For Christopher Columbus to be moving and sailing, the money thing got to be taken care of. It can't be no, I got dead cargo when I show up. No, when I show up, the cargo got to be on point. And if anybody paid me to go get some niggas for them, when I get back, I got to have the niggas, man. They can't be sick and smelling like feces and whatnot. You understand? Think about that. They got to be healthy. If you're going to try to sell a 30-year-old man or a 22-year-old boy, he's got to be strong. You can't be pitching a strong Negro and, you know, his ribs is showing. He all dehydrated and shit. They at sea, what water are they drinking? See what I'm saying?
Complex network of warehouses and suppliers that stretches across the world.
It's a very complex. We used to be not more than 1,200 guests. The ships are bigger and bigger and bigger. Today is more sophisticated, and it's a lot of area to control too, you know? Of course, it can work like wild old machines, you know? Like a Swiss watch machine, okay?
All of this food needs to be loaded onto the ship through a single door. To prevent a backlog, it's delivered immediately to one of 48 separate food stores. Everything has a place, and every crate has to be loaded at a specific time. One late delivery can threaten to disrupt the entire machine.
You are late again. Very bad. I don't like it.
This is catering on a massive scale. In 1 week, the ship's passengers will consume 70,000 eggs, 15 tons of meat, and 47 tons of fruit and veg. Every item must be checked rigorously before it goes on board.
Nothing can go back on board without the sticker of K9. If the Coast Guard comes and it goes on board without the K9, that's trouble.
As well as safety, Ben and his team have to check every item for quality.
This is halibut. That's come from Alaska. Salmon. For the sushi, look how beautiful. This is a ribeye steak, a 20 ounce. This is our biggest protein product. Blackberry. This is for pastries. Then the strawberry, we don't want them big, we don't want them small.
Every week, the checks throw up some surprises.
You see what's happened to the pineapple? This is a freezer bird. And what's happened is softness and ruined the product. Even if it's one case, we send the whole lot, you have to give me a new product. In the next 2 hours, you have to bring me pineapples. I will call the vendors now, and I will tell him that all the pineapple have to be returned.
Moving luggage and food is only half the battle. The most important job on turnaround day is to move people. All passengers have to be off the ship by 11:30 a.m. This moment is known as the zero count. If any guests are still on board, it means that none of the new passengers can get on.
What's the 1030 count, if you have it for me, please?
On board 500, 500 on board at 1030.
Thank you very much, Miss Ruby. Let's get them out quickly.
New passengers are already arriving at Terminal F, where the Seaside is docked.
Bill, now here they're talking about the task of moving hundreds of people on and off the ship and how long that actually takes. People gathering their stuff, just people moving themselves, being distracted, dropping things, looking around, not listening. You see what I'm saying? And I'm pointing this out. This is what I'm saying. These videos are great illustrations of, yo, what's required to manage the type of management requirements necessary to move masses of people by sea. That still to this day in 2024, it's difficult. And though they do it, it's challenging and they have technology. Columbus and them did not have any of the technology, nor did they have the size and scale of ships that these individuals have. So think about that.
Built specifically to handle this ship, it's the biggest terminal at Miami Port, and it's already getting busy.
We're actually about 120 people left on board, and we already have about 200 people checked in. This is probably the most nerve-wracking point of the day, when you're right between getting people off and getting people on.
At this point, we start searching people, looking for them in the rooms, around the pool, the open bars, and just making sure we get down to zero people as quickly as possible.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to stop it right there, though. All right? I'm going to stop right there. And hopefully, you guys will look into some of this stuff. You'll think about some of it. Hopefully it sparked some curiosity, you know, but do some of your own investigation and let me know what you think. Before I wrap the episode up, I just want to mention St. Joe's Hawks. Shout out to St. Joe's University. Okay, y'all know this is the March Madness month. So teams have been balling, man. They've been putting in that work. Okay. So St. Joe's just played Seton Hall. The fellas took on Seton Hall at their own arena, and the St. Joe's Hawks played the ladies of Seton Hall at Hagen Arena in Philadelphia. So shout out to those ladies for pulling off a W. Shout out to Seton Hall for also putting in that work. It was a decent game, man. I was there. I had a very good time. Front row, right next to the commentator's booth. Y'all know how we do. So I was right up in there. And it was a good time, man, seeing the game being played. Y'all know I just started recently getting my hoop on. All crazy now. Of course, I played basketball as a kid and everything like that, but just making it a part of my exercise routine and things like that. So it's been really fun, and it's been helpful in encouraging me to get more involved with the sports. And also, we told you guys earlier that we wanted to get more active in community engagement and things like that. So this is a step in that direction. So I went on out to the game, you know what I'm saying, to check it out and give my support. And also, I want to make it, this is personal for me, that I want to make it some effort to just support female basketball, you know, because why not? I look at the WNBA and I think that it has potential to be as big as the NBA is. However, people have to become interested. So there can be some marketing and promotion and PR and all different kind of stuff to help that occur. And yeah, I get all of the political things that guys mention all the time that, in the WNBA, it's not as exciting as the men's game is, but, you know, the women's game is the women's game. I think when we compare it to the men's game, it takes away from all of the magical goodness that it does have. So, you know, that's a little bit of my two cents. You know, but I wanted to shout out St. Joe's for pulling off that win. Now, I would like to share this with you guys. Now, I hadn't seen St. Joe's team at all. I just went to the game. You know what I'm saying? I seen it being advertised and promoted, so I just went. And when I got there, I was wondering why everybody was looking at me like I was crazy. Okay. And still, I didn't care. I was there shooting basketball. However, when I pulled up, and I did my media thing a little bit, of course, I brought out a few cameras. Okay. Did a little photo, a little video. But I was wondering why everybody was looking at me like it was crazy. And I didn't know that St. Joe's had a primarily white team. Okay. That the majority of their young ladies were, you know, white girls. I didn't know that. Okay, so what? They're basketball players. They're here to play some ball. Now, I didn't care. You get what I'm saying? However, the players and the coaches and the fans, they were looking at me like I was crazy. So that's what got me looking at everything different. Like I was just in there to see some dope basketball. So I get on the court. You know what I mean? I get in my seat and I'm like, okay. Let's work. Okay, let's work. And the girls turned around like, who are you talking to, us? And I'm sitting like, yeah, come on, the buckets. And so I look down the court. I start seeing everybody looking at me with the I'm crazy face. And so I take a look at Seton Hall. All right. Now, I did just see the guys play. But so I gathered that Seton Hall was a you know, had a lot of black folks on it. Cool. But when I looked at Seton Hall's girls, they had all black girls. You know what I'm saying? It was all sisters on their team. So I said, damn. Oh, shit. I didn't realize this was the matchup. And I said, well, why St. Joe's? Why they team don't have no sisters on it? They got one sister. They had one young girl on that team. And in this particular game, that sister didn't even play. She ain't get no tick. Okay? So, St. Joe's, St. Joe's, do you? But I was really curious. I was really curious as to why and how. Yo, how can you be a Philly team with no sisters on it? And we got sisters that hoop. Okay. But they so yeah, they were looking at me like I was crazy and everything like that. But St. Joe's was the Philly team. Okay, Seton Hall, I believe is Jersey, right? So I'm repping the Philly team. And it just so happened that this team didn't have any sisters on it, but I don't give a damn. I'm here to see some basketball. You know, that's another discussion, all of the other shit. Right in the moment, I just want to see some balling, and I want the Philly team to win. So I was cheering my ass off. If y'all can hear it, I'm a little hoarse. I was cheering my ass off. You know what I'm saying? Because why not? And they pulled a win off. Yeah. St. Joe's women, the Lady Hawks, they pulled a damn win off out this mug. I feel like my energy contributed. Thank you very much. And to be quite honest with you, I don't see how St. Joe's was supposed to win in the game necessarily, okay? Not with all them sisters that Seton Hall had. So let me explain it. As I'm sitting here and I'm getting my cameras ready and everything like that, I'm bigging up the home team, right? And the home team is looking at me like, yo, is that dude rooting us on? And they kind of like, okay, bet. So at first they was real shocked. When I came out, they was warming up. They was like, well, what the hell? Then they went to the locker room and came back out of the locker room. When they came back out of the locker room, it's like everybody was like, all right, we know the boy there. If he there, we're going to turn up a bit. So they came out and they start turning up. And I was like, so I was turning up. I mean, we all locked in. I locked in on being encouraging and they locked in on, you know, focusing on the game. So then I started paying attention to Seton Hall side. And I said, oh, shit. Damn, that's all sisters. And so, damn, look. And so the black guy in me kicked in, right? And the black guy was like, well, damn, sisters, I want y'all to win, too. But I was like, but either way, y'all from Jersey. I'm from Philly, so I'm rooting for the Philly team. So then I was like, well, damn, who we got on our team right now? Once I see all of the sisters on the other team, I say, well, I go through that process of, oh, shit, I'm black, they black. I want them to be winners, too, right? But what I'm going to do, I said, but I got to stick with my guns and just root for the Philly team because I'm not fake like that. And I'm not from Jersey. So, sisters, y'all from Jersey, sorry. Whoever balling on the Philly team, I want them to smoke y'all. All right, so then I go over to the St. Joe's team and I'm looking at it and I say, dang, who do we have? This is when I discovered we only had one black girl. Now, I thought we would at least have a black girl as the center. We ain't, you know, a point guard or something like that. We ain't had none of that, man. So on our team, we got straight white girl across the bench, right? The one black girl, she ain't get no time. And so I'm thinking, well, how are we going to make this thing happen right here, Philly? Right? So I said, either way, I'm going to just keep rooting because I've been watching them in their warm-ups. And in their warm-ups, we got some shooters. St. Joe's got some shooters. They were making these beautiful jump shots. Now, y'all know with the defense on you is different, but they can handle the rock. They had some ball movement action. They had some fakes and some feints. I said, okay. I'm just going to stay confident and see what they do. Okay. But in the back of my mind, I said, if Seton Hall wins, I won't be surprised. The game got going, right? And Seton Hall came out first nine points up on the board, 9-0 for a couple minutes. St. Joe's first 2 points were free throws. Were free throws. Okay? So they had to get fouled to get on the board. Then later they started to cook, okay? The young lady, Mackenzie, she came out there. She popped a couple two-pointers and some three-pointers to get things rolling. And then it was off to the races, you know what I'm saying? The game stalled out at a little point, somewhere around 15, 14 points, something like that. You know what I mean? They stalled out for a period. There was no scoring going on, but the game went on in and things picked up. All right, now... Here's what I picked up and gathered from the game. Okay. The Seton Hall sisters had all of everything that they needed to win and dominate. However, they didn't lock in and dominate, but they had everything to do it. They had folks who could ball handle. They had some shooters. They had a big girl. That could grab the boards down and put up the quick finger roll or layup off the backboard. However, they just didn't lock in. And we can talk about all different kind of reasons why they didn't lock in. I've imagined several scenarios of why they didn't lock in. However, they just didn't. They just didn't. Okay? All they needed to do, that's all I can say is, yeah, they just didn't lock in. They just didn't dominate these girls. That's all. But they could have. They just didn't. Okay? St. Joe's. Their young ladies did a good job of shooting. They could have shot a lot more. They would have shot a lot more. They could have, you know what I mean? They could have really secured a tighter win. Could have racked up some points, just not being afraid to shoot that ball. And also, they could have got inside a little bit more. Yeah, it's like they attempted to do all of the work from the outside, which made scoring more difficult for them. You know what I'm saying? Because they had to keep looking for these open shots where the long distance shot wasn't open. But right under the basket is where the play could have been. So not being willing to kind of play those ladies on the inside, I think worked against them. Okay. However, there were so many fouls called in this game that St. Joe's was able to make a significant amount of points in free throws. You know what I'm saying? To keep themselves alive. Which really made me evaluate the free throw differently. Seeing how they utilized fouls and free throws in there, I said, wow. You know? And, you know, of course, some people in the audience was like, oh, come on, refs. Y'all call a lot of fouls. Let them play. Whether or not the refs were acting funny style, I don't know. I don't know. But those girls could have made a lot more points. St. Joe's by getting in that paint, man, not being scared. You know, they did a lot of pretty shooting, you know what I'm saying? But go ahead, ladies, get in that paint. Don't be afraid to go ahead and put some layup ups. It's a young lady, Julia, number 5, I believe, for St. Joe's. She demonstrated some impressive ball handling. However, I believe her first 2 points of the game were from the free throw line. I think she could do a lot more scoring if she just went for it. However, she did a good job handling the ball and finding open teammates. She could really score a lot of points if she just shot the ball. She's short. She's a shorter player. She's fast. She can use that to her advantage. And she has enough ball handling skill to improve it to where she could really get to the basket quick if she practices it. But she could do that. If she adds that to her game, she'll be really effective. Because like I said, she's small. And so she can get to the basket really quick before a lot of people realize she's at the basket. Yeah. Yeah, man. But a cool game. Now, the Seton Hall ladies have some players, man. They demonstrated as well some very decent moves around the basket, pulling down the boards. You know what I'm saying? Some fadeaways. Like, I would have loved to see those girls just going off. I would have loved to just see them. I would have loved to just see them wilding out. Cause they could have, man. They could have been showing out. And this is where it all comes down to sometimes the players and where they are mentally. If they're in it, if they're not, you know. But yeah, that's my take on the game, man. That's a little bit of my recap on the game. Shout out to also the bands and the cheerleaders and the what they call them, like majorettes or anything, something like that. So shout out to everybody who came out there and made the event a success. I had some snacks. I do have some footage, And I'll probably share that with you guys on Instagram if I haven't already. And also, you probably see some footage over at our website, www.daus.me, where we're nonstop working. All right, but I'm going to continue to keep up with the sports, especially the women's sports. I'm thinking that's going to be my thing, aside from other stuff. And so look out for that at the website. Make sure you guys visit nastywork.com, you know, where you can stay up on American battle rap and what's happening as the battle rap front continues to grow. Shout out to everybody in the world of battle rap, virtual battle rap. Shout out to my man Viral Money. He's preparing to battle out in L.A. He'll be there this weekend doing his thing at the Riot, if you guys are familiar with that. But definitely stay tuned for the recap. That'll be available at our website, www.daus.me, as well, and also nastywork.com as well. Visit Baron Heard Paintings for your artwork updates. All right, I got some new work that's going to be posted up there soon. So, yeah, yeah, look out for that. And also visit chesstrunk.com. We're still preparing our first ever tournament. Mm-hmm. That's going to be decent. So look out for that. And artists, we're still accepting submissions for the songwriting competition. All right. So write your song, submit your music. You know what I'm saying? It's going down for your chance to win a quick $100 and a trophy. Yeah, I'm saying, who, you know, why not? You can commit that. No, no, no. So, yeah, man, that's it. I'm going to get up out of here. I did my ball playing for the day, my workout and everything like that for the day. So I'm feeling good. But, yeah, it's the Nonstop Working Podcast, anchor.fm/215, the Nonstop Working Podcast, Philly's number one independent podcast. Shout out to everybody around the world who's been visiting our website, www.daus.me, where we're nonstop working. And we'll see you guys soon.